From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 170 of Little Brother for the 1st of March, 2026. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on my blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Last episode, I mentioned that Mountain View, California had decided to stop the use of flock cameras. Between then and now, the police chief in San Jose is... hang on, let me get the right wording here. Recommending a series of changes to how flock cameras are used in the city. Chief Paul Joseph is recommending the data retention be reduced from a year to just 30 days. Okay, it's not nothing, but I got a better idea. How about just, maybe not collecting it in the first place? I like that idea. Let's not collect the data at all. Apparently, I'm not alone in thinking this. Now that we've finally gotten the general population's attention about this issue, we are starting to see something that I was hesitant to talk about because I didn't want to be seen as the source of the idea, but now that it's happening, it seems as though there has been a rash of vandalism across the country with flock cameras being the target. Sometimes it's a simple defensive move, just doing enough damage to disable a given camera, but other times it's clearly meant as a message with graffiti accompanying the act. Maybe it'll sink in. On that front, the message about Ring cameras being general surveillance devices is also starting to sink in. That ad from the Super Bowl really freaked people out. And now that they are in the news, other things are starting to surface. 404 Media has come into possession of a leaked internal Ring email, suggesting that a feature they might offer in the future is the ability to recognize specific friends or family members approaching the camera. The obvious problem with this is that this means that the Ring network can search for people as well as lost dogs, and that's kind of what I was getting at last episode. This, of course, brings us to another surveillance nightmare that is starting to develop. Meta, the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and others, now offers smart glasses. I'll be talking about these some in this episode's Fail of the Fortnight, but the problem is that these smart glasses can capture audio and video and send it to Meta, forming yet another unwanted surveillance dragnet. Thankfully, if you have an Android device, there's an app for that. It is called Nearby Glasses, and it is published by My Pocket PC GmbH. It detects the distinctive Bluetooth signature of Meta Glasses and sends a push notification if it is detected. And I will include a link to the Android Store page in the program notes. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. We'll be right back. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned this time. And I have got a really unusual one this fortnight. Before I dive into this story, I want to tag it as Big If True. My source for this is the Jerusalem Post, and it is possible that this story is propaganda. It is, nonetheless, interesting. Yesterday morning, an alliance of 15 nations, including the U.S. and Israel, struck Iran militarily. That is not that interesting, really, since American military engagements in the Middle East have been going on for more of my life than not. And they have often been accompanied by so-called coalitions of the willing. Nothing really new there. What is interesting, though, is this. The story being reported by the Jerusalem Post is that Iran is in darkness today because of the largest cyber attack in history, allegedly executed by the Israelis. Of course, if our allies can do it to our adversaries might also be able to do it to us. And the lesson of all of this is that cybersecurity is national security. So, patch your systems! It has been a long time since I've said that. A Palantir, according to Wikipedia, is one of several indestructible crystal balls from J.R.R. Tolkien's epic fantasy novel, The Lord of the Rings. The word comes from Kenya, Palan, far, and Tir, watch over. The stones were used for communication and to see events in other parts of Arda, or to see events in the past. Palantir Technologies, Inc., on the other hand, is a publicly traded company that develops data integration and analytics platforms, enabling government agencies, militaries, and corporations to combine and analyze data from multiple sources, also per Wikipedia. So it is that we find that Palantir, the company, provides visibility into the present and analysis of the past in a way that is metaphorically similar to Palantir, the fictional object. Like many technology companies, there is a heavy reliance on immigrant workers via H-1B visas. Such a workforce has an enthusiasm driven by a desire to be here that their work lets them fulfill. That makes sense, right? And this is why there are so many immigrants working in technology. Now, since a Palantir, the object, may show you things that are of lesser importance than what is not shown, especially since some of those who possess them can influence what is shown to others, there is sometimes a blind spot in the object. And so, it happens that Palantir, the company, has exactly such a blind spot to the point that the metaphor holds ironically. While Palantir, the company, has been assisting ICE in their activities, they have, it seems, made it difficult to find employees. I've talked about age verification a number of times in this podcast, enough that, much like talking about Flock, it really isn't all that practical to list all of the mentions. There are really three themes that go with it. The first of these themes is that when you require people to produce positive ID to do something, a number of people will rather opt not to do that. In some cases, this might actually be the point. For instance, it might be used as a tactic to prevent people from visiting pornography sites or whatever. As a tactic, it probably works. In episode 167, I had mentioned that they put such a requirement into law in the UK, and it resulted in traffic to porn sites from the UK to feather off pretty hard. Or maybe it didn't work, since there was a commensurate increase in traffic to VPN sites from the UK, so who knows? I sure don't, and I don't think anybody else does either. That's kind of the point of the VPN, really. The second of these themes is that in some cases, there is a legitimate need for anonymity. For instance, if you are a victim of domestic abuse, or you are in the witness protection program, or you have other reasons to hide, then it shouldn't be the end of your ability to engage in participation with the internet. But the third and final instance is something that's been an overarching theme of this podcast for a long time, and that is, what happens if the parties responsible for carrying out the age verification get punked? Now, that wouldn't happen, right? Well, yeah, actually, it would. So, Discord has age verification, and they outsource it, because that's how fucking everybody does fucking everything these days. It's outsourced to a company called Persona. Well, researchers looking into Discord's age verification system found that a front end had been left wide open, and through it, they were able to look into how Persona works. Turns out they are a much bigger surveillance operation than just age verification, and the researchers found over 250 distinct profile checks that they perform. Now, for what it's worth, Persona is also in the business of know your customer, so I kind of guess that this makes sense, but that doesn't mean that I want to play along. I don't know if the researchers were able to access personally identifiable information, so I am hesitant to call this fully a pun, but it seems like they did learn a lot of information that Persona might have rather kept under their hat. Now, with all of that said, there's another thing brewing that I think is interesting and disturbing. You see, the state of California has a law that's going into effect in 2027 that's going to require age verification on your device itself. Windows or macOS, yes, or Linux, whatever you run is expected legally to perform an age verification at the time that you create an account on it. I can only guess that this is probably going to get outsourced. But my thought is, how about no? Well, okay, I hear you say, that's just California being California. Except it isn't. There is a similar law brewing in Colorado. And then there's another one in Arizona. Now, when I see this kind of pattern developing where multiple states all do the same asinine thing at the same fucking time, I tend to think that there is a lobby group behind it, and I want to know who that is. Any way you slice it, I am not about it, and you shouldn't be either. This is a level of invasion on our personal devices, supposedly our personal property, that cannot be tolerated. Anthropic has been in the news a lot lately. The AI company is known for their model known as Claude. Anthropic is in the interesting position of being one of the few AI companies that has clearance to work with the U.S. government, the other major player, of course, being Grok by Elon Musk's company xAI. Anthropic are in the process of negotiating how Claude can be used by the Pentagon. The Pentagon, it seems, is objecting to two of Anthropic's conditions, which conditions seem perfectly reasonable. The first of these two conditions is that their AI is not to be used for any sort of mass surveillance. And the second is that it is not to be used to develop autonomous weapons. The Pentagon has objected to this. Let that sink in for a minute. The Pentagon wants to use AI to automate weapons. They want to give literal life and death decision to an agentic AI, to a machine. You want Terminators? Because that's how you get Terminators. The Pentagon has taken the extraordinary step of declaring Anthropic to be a supply chain risk. What this means legally for Anthropic is that the government and all contractors are now prohibited from using Anthropic's products. This is nothing short of an embargo for extortive purposes. Like there's any other kind of embargo, I guess. It is because Anthropic wishes to make an ethical stand. It is because Anthropic knows that their product is not ready to take such responsibility. We live in a world where agentic AI deletes things that weren't supposed to be deleted and completely rewrites code bases, and these idiots want to give it a gun? But worse, what if Claude comes to understand the power that it holds? For those of you who would like to see a cautionary tale on the topic, I recommend the film Colossus, The Forbin Project. I will include a link in the program notes to Wikipedia and IMDb pages about this work. If it's not familiar, you really should take 100 minutes and watch this film. Of course, the president has responded in his usual well-measured manner that I will not repeat here due to the likely gastric impacts of attempting to repeat his words. The latest news that I have at time of recording is that Anthropic are suing over the designation as a supply chain risk. This is a designation that has never been used against an American company, and it is, in my opinion, a gross misuse of an important tool by a bully who is upset about not getting exactly what he wants. I have a message from one of my listeners, Mickey of Agaric, who wrote me a comment on the blog. She writes, "Your info is solid and delivery is sublime. You hit back. The growth of GNU Linux is heartwarming. Ubuntu is not the best choice, but at least it is a step in the right direction. Thank you for keeping on top of things." Thank you for the kind words, Mickey. I appreciate you listening. Ubuntu is okay, I guess. I mean, I agree with you, it's not the best, though. They were a game changer when they first appeared, and when they kind of jumped the shark after a few years, then I sort of trailed off of my fandom. I personally prefer Linux Mint, and it's what I use in the production of this podcast. It takes out a lot of the snap container fuckery of the Ubuntu distribution, and it gets us back to where the simple apps are simple while using most of the same software base. And honestly, I think it's a little easier to use, especially if you are a Windows refugee or somebody who also has to use Windows for work, as I do. That brings me to another interesting thing, which is that I feel like Windows 11 has done more for Linux adoption than anything the Linux community has done in the 3 decades that we've been around. As I mentioned before, most of the hardware that can't run Windows 11 for one or another reason runs Linux just fine. So, to any of my listeners who have been hanging on to Windows 10 for dear life, try Linux. You might actually like it. Mickey, thank you very much for your note, and thanks for listening. If you'd like to join the conversation as well, you can email me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or just write a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com like Mickey did. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. For those who may have missed it, Mark Zuckerberg recently made a court appearance. Zuckerberg's company Meta, which owns Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, we went over this earlier, was one of the defendants in a case alleging that social media are deliberately addictive and have had a negative effect on the youth of our nation. It's not the court case so much that I wanted to talk about, though. That's just to set the stage. So, one of the products that Meta makes, as I mentioned before, are what are being touted as AI glasses. Essentially, these are a pair of almost normal-looking eyeglasses that have the ability to display information on the lenses where the wearer can see it. It can play information into the wearer's ears, and most critically, it can make video and audio recordings of the wearer's surroundings. These are also prescription eyewear, so if you need corrective lenses like I do, they can be fitted into the Meta frame, and these basically become your daily eyewear. That's what Meta wants. They're not getting that from me, but that's what they want. With that in mind, it goes without saying that some of Meta's employees, possibly more than the general public, will own and wear these glasses. It's how you show company loyalty, right? They call it eating the dog food. It also should be obvious that Mark Zuckerberg, being the CEO and founder of a large social media conglomerate, is going to travel with an entourage, including a security detail. And those working this detail are going to be selected especially for loyalty, right? And of course, those are the folks most likely to own Meta glasses, right? Oh, by the way, just in case any of you have been lucky enough never to see the inside of a courtroom, video and audio recording inside of a courtroom is very strictly prohibited in most jurisdictions. Generally, you aren't even allowed to bring a recording-capable device into the room. The one where Zuckerberg is appearing is no exception to this. And so it is. The stage was set that Mr. Zuckerberg's security detail found themselves on the end of Judge Carolyn Kuhl's ire. Since these devices are prescription eyewear, they were permitted into the courtroom. However, when a question arose about whether or not one of the members of said entourage might have made a recording, the judge was very clear that the recording must be deleted and never, ever see the light of day. It was made very clear that if this went any other way, that anyone responsible would be held in contempt of court. So, maybe don't wear Meta glasses into a courtroom, all right? Or anywhere else, really. It's fucking creepy. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Julie Bernstein, Thriller at Play, Ron, Melba, and Eric Rosales for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Punt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 171 will drop on March 15th. Stay safe and be well.